And I've been out a little while, but and if I get through today, I'll be through that subject for a time. But I feel this way, that Jesus Christ and the Apostle Paul came to grips with real issues in their day. That Christianity deals with real issues. If you read the Sermon on the Mount, you'll find out it deals with very practical, real issues. The Apostle Paul preached in just what we have here in the Bible, and of course, he did a lot of preaching, preached a lot of sermons about things we're not even aware of, because they're not in the Word of God. We only have a very small part of his messages. These are only his letters written. And when he was in the assembly itself, he must have even done more dealing with the individual problems of the group. But even with what we have, he talked about the social sins of the days, about effeminate men and homosexuality and adultery and fornication, legalism, world philosophy, science, falsely so-called, lack of unity in the church, obeying the need to obey civil rulers, going to court, not denying the spouse sexual relations, advice to the unmarried, advice to the parents, long hair and short hair for men and women, materialism, the snails of the world, boasting, foolishness, women's dress, asceticism, the need to work as opposed to laziness, gossiping. And I'm sure that if the members of his church all had television and they were bringing in all the sins of Rome into his church, I'm sure it would have been an issue of the day. And I feel that it is a major issue. And while I am not demanding that anybody do anything, yet it is my business to preach against sin in the church. And the church is the believers, not the building. Ecclesia, the called out ones. Are you called out? Called out from what? You call out from the world, you call out from television. I'm not saying that watching on the television screen is wrong. I've done so myself, I'll probably do so again. But I don't spend my time watching all that garbage programs, that's for sure. I've seen a few garbage programs. That's how come I know the garbage programs. You see, most of you, parents, would not allow your children to associate with the people they're watching on television. Right? I mean, you don't let them associate with any old riffraff out there because they might get influenced, right? That bad kid down the block that uses all that bad language, you don't let them play with him. And he's in all kinds of stuff. He's a bad influence. You shall not go play with that kid. He's in problems. That's what you got on television. Problems, bad influence, bad language, bad philosophy. You wouldn't think of letting them associate with those people, but that's what they're doing, is associating with those people. In their minds, it's the influence. They're not getting hurt by them physically, but they're getting the influence you don't want to rub off down the street. Exactly. And worse. Plus the fact that you will not allow sin in your home. That is, you won't allow pornographic magazines, and hopefully, and you won't allow real bad influencers and your kids to do all bad things in your home. But when you turn the television set in, you're allowing this stuff in your home. You're allowing drinking in your home, cursing, Satanist doctrines, all kinds of world brainwashed philosophy. By the ton, hour after hour, every day, you allow these people to come into your home and go hour after hour, even when you don't even know what's happening, just continually telling your kids, just getting them right out in front of them. You wouldn't allow Seventh-day Adventists, or you wouldn't allow Jehovah's Witness, although the Seventh-day Adventists are not like Jehovah's Witnesses. They're born again, most of them, and they're good people of God. But, I mean, you're talking about just even a doctrinal difference. And Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormonism and Buddhism and all the rest, you wouldn't allow people to come into your home and sit your children down and start talking to them. You wouldn't allow communists. You wouldn't allow full communists. You wouldn't even allow liberals to come in and indoctrinate your kids in the school. Yet we allow liberalism to indoctrinate our children hour after hour after hour on the television. Am I right? So, you know, we can get so stupid. Can I use that word? We can get so stupid that we unload to such sleep that we don't even recognize what we're doing, because it becomes a customary tradition. And you know how we preach about traditions. Traditions. Nothing wrong with tradition if it's a good tradition. But if it's a bad tradition, see, there are people who hold on to traditions just because it's traditional. Jesus said, call no man father. They do it. Why do they violate Jesus? Because they're so used to doing it. It's done it for youth. It's just so common. It's so easy to do it. Well, then why do we do this? Because it's so easy. Because we grew up with it. But if we blame them for not obeying the word of God in that, how can we turn around and disobey God by allowing this kind of wilderness in our homes hour after hour and think nothing about it? We are just as guilty. More so. More so. Because it has greater impact. So with that in mind, there's two books I'm going to read you. I'm going to read you portions of them. This one is called The Early Window, Effects of Television on Children and Youth. And it's part of a... editors, Arnold Goldstein, Syracuse University. And it's not a Christian publication at all. And it has to do with psychological surveys, field studies, lab studies. They've delved into all kinds of aspects. And some of us, a lot of the more interesting part is really too deep to read because it's too difficult. They get into all the different aspects of it, and it's lengthy. And I won't be able to read all the things that go into for controls and everything, but I'm going to start reading here. I'll be skipping from place to place, just giving some highlights. Basically, I want to show you the impact it has on violence, but if it has impact on violence, it has impact on everything else too. Every aspect you're being influenced on. Women are, and this is in television, women are presented as less law-abiding than men. Even heroines are portrayed as generally deviant from the community values. You're finding that out because it's part of women's lib business that the women are the ones who are, they're the ones who make all the sexual aggressions, and they're the deviants from the normal society. I'm talking about in general, of course. In 1969, about 8 in 10 plays still contained violence, and frequency of violent episodes was still about 5 per play and 8 per hour. Further, the most violent programs were those designated exclusively for children, cartoons. Now, this was after a push to get rid of violence. Still, there was that much. In 1954, Smythe also found that children's programming contained 3 times as much violence as adult drama. The role of law enforcement officers in all drama is relatively small, about 20% of general dramatic episodes, but that role is exceedingly and increasingly violent, the law part of it. Law officers were violent in about 60% of their appearances in 1967, 72% in 1968, 77% in 1969. And that's quite a while. I don't know what it is now. Lawmen became more likely to inflict violence without being aggressed against themselves. This is on the television, of course. In real life, the great majority of law enforcement officers rarely, if ever, fire their guns, except in the target range. Criminal activity and efforts to stop it do not make up the bulk of violence on television. Rather, it is non-criminals, otherwise admirable citizens, who use violence to solve the problems. The crime emphasized in dramas are relatively infrequent in real life. Although television entertainment does not provide an accurate picture of the real world, many children and adolescents believe that it does. Many children associate TV violence with real-life violence, and that these children are more likely to be aggressive themselves. One reason suggested by Eve Merriam is that such shows teach children that violence is just another form of entertainment. They are becoming passively jaded. As a kind of self-protection, they develop thick skins to avoid being upset by the gougings, smashings, and stompings they see in TV. As the voice of reason is shown to be a swift uppercut to the chin, shallow viewers cannot afford to get involved. For if they did, their emotions would be shredded. So they keep cool, distantly unaffected. Boredom sets in, and the whole cycle starts over again. Bring on another show with even more bone-crushing and teeth-smashing so the viewers will react. They can't get themselves actually fully involved in the real full drama. They do get themselves involved, all right, emotionally, and it affects their behavior, but they can't get fully involved, so they learn to watch things far beyond their abilities to get involved in and learn to view it so that it's, as though it doesn't have any real effect. Now, I had a testimony of this the other day in my home. We had people over, fellowshipping. One girl said, when I was in the motorcycle gangs, there was an incident where there was a shootout, and somebody was on the street was shooting the people in the crowd. They were shooting real bullets, hitting people out in the crowd. Finally, four bullets stopped this guy, and he fell on the street, and they were just getting ready to get out of there because the police were coming. She said, I stood there, being called this motorcycle gang, she said, I stood there feeling no fear. Although real bullets were flying, people were getting killed, saying, this is just like on television. This is just like on television. This is just like on television. So when the final says, shut up and let's go, And here was this person was watching people getting killed. They were just as numb and affected. This isn't what I was looking for, the same thing. Unaffected as if they were watching on television, just watching another drama on the street. Well, just, channel 5 or whatever it is, just watching it. That's what can happen. And so those things don't affect people much anymore. Wait till someday when there's going to be some real persecution and various things involved, and people just like television. It's not going to mean much anymore. Similarly, psychiatrist Frederick Wortham is concerned that while TV violence blunts emotional responses to both entertainment and real-life aggression, it also serves as a uniquely effective school for violence. Whether crime and violence programs arouse a lust for violence, reinforce it when it is present, show a way to carry it out, teach the best method to get away with it, or merely blunt the child's and adult's awareness of its wrongness, television has become a school for violence. Now, this is an in-depth study on violence of many, many thousands of case histories and laboratory histories and field studies and so forth. In all three program types, violent methods were the ones most frequently used in goal attainment, and violence and other illegal activities worked on television. When goal achievement methods were further analyzed for degree of success, it became clear that the most successful methods were not those in the socially approved category, simply then television programming, both aimed at children and at adults, is presenting an antisocial system of values. Do violence to carry it out. In other words, if it's against police, against laws, do it anyway. Break into homes, do things because you feel this way, you feel wronged. Now, if everybody who feels wronged is able to go ahead and start doing things like that, we've got anarchy. We have, that's bringing in Laodicea into the church. Himmelwhite, Oppenheim, and Vince found that British television, this is the place I had marked, the values presented on television may actually change children's perceptions. One study conducted by Martin Vavinovich and his associates showed that sensitivity to violence may be affected directly by television. Research concerning television's effects on children focuses on a portion of a larger area of scientific investigation, observational learning, or the way in which the behavior of children and adults changes as a result of exposure to the actions and values of others. Studies of observational learning demonstrate that such exposure can change varied behaviors, such as a child's willingness to aid others, his ability to display self-control, and his learning of language rules. Observation of others on film can decrease learning of unfamiliar behaviors, increase sharing, and decrease fear. Two critical factors in observational learning. A child does not just learn new behavior from watching others. He also learns when and whether it is appropriate to act or avoid acting in certain ways. In other words, he uses all the information contained in what he has seen to decide upon his own actions. He learns when it's all right, it's all right to do something. In this experiment called Various Consequences, he showed nursery school children a 5-minute film on television screen in which an adult demonstrated 4 novel aggressive responses against a large plastic Bobo doll. 1/3 of the children saw only the novel responses. They formed the no consequence control group. Another 1/3 of the children saw an additional scene in which the model was generously rewarded with candy and other treats and enthusiastically praised for his aggressive behavior. The remaining children saw the model both physically and verbally punished for aggression. Then each child was taken to a playroom containing, among other toys, a plastic Bobo doll. It was a familiar object they saw on television, you know, where they got it watered in one case, in another case it got beat up, and so forth for aggressive behavior. And then one was, which didn't. The measure of acceptance was the number of aggressive behaviors now spontaneously performed by the child. Children who saw the model punished performed fewer aggressive responses than children in the other 2 experimental conditions. A measure of acquisition followed. An adult experimenter offered the child rewards for each of the model's responses he could reproduce. In this case, when the children were offered incentives for performing, all groups showed the same high level of learning. Children in the model punished conditions clearly learned to aggress, but apparently used the consequences to the model as an indication of what might happen to them if they acted in the same way. And they prudently decided not to imitate. But most important, they still retained these novel forms of aggression and were able to and willing to use them later. Sometimes the high-status model is imitated simply because the observer aspires to high status himself and hopes to attain it by imitating behaviors of the high-status model. Additional evidence offers support for the proposition that competence of the model is also an important variable for the amount of imitation. So the more competent the person is and the higher position and the more of a hero he is on television, the greater degree to imitate him. For example, my wife and I were walking down the mall, and here was a picture, great big huge picture, cardboard statue and picture of a character on television called the Fonz. And my wife says, "Who's that?" And she didn't remember what the name was. I remember what the name was. I didn't mention it. And we had seen, briefly. And she said, "Who would want to, one of them? I mean, that's, hero, as far as she could see, She's kind of still a rebellious type of kid, Still with his slouchy, rebellious, way. Yet he becomes the hero of the American generation. Not Jesus Christ, but the Fonz. How many wonderful Christians do you see out here as with big posters? How many stores have posters of Anita Bryan, for example? See? How many of y'all are buying posters of Charles Fuller or Billy Graham or people along these categories? They're not. C.M. Ward, no, they're not getting any posters and bought of them. It's these other type of characters. Network officials have sometimes justified television violence because the bad guy is always punished for his behavior, which is not true. The usual sequence involves aggression by the villain, to which he achieves his immediate objectives, the plan for the latest nuclear weapon or the contents of the bank vault. Then the hero catches up and punishes the villain by shooting, beating, or otherwise physically assaulting him. The hero then walks off for the promotion, a blonde, a bottle of champagne, or if he's lucky, all 3, plus vacation in the sun. The observer is thus exposed to 2 aggressive models, one punished and the other rewarded. Research suggests that the child will learn the aggressive behavior of both characters. But because of the different consequences, the actions of the rewarded model might easily be copied immediately, while the actions of the punished model will not be. Still, the child may later display the behavior he has learned from the punished model if the incentives become sufficient. Because the other, you see, got incentives. So we copy the model. He got incentives. He's a good guy. But later, if there's enough incentive, in other words, $3 million produces a Brink robbery. Enough incentive, see. You can get away with it, and the amount of catch is large. That's what I've been doing on television for ages, getting away with it. Experimental evidence for television's potential to induce direct imitation of aggression is provided very clearly in a series of recent studies. In the first of these, 4 and 5 year old boys from a Sunday school kindergarten served the subjects. Half of them observed a 2.5 minute color sound film in which an adult male model aggressed against a human clown. The behavior displayed by his symbolic model included sharp and unprovoked verbal insults to the clown, shooting at the clown with a toy machine gun and beating the clown vigorously with a plastic mallet. The others saw no such film. Thereafter, 4 and 5 year olds. Thereafter, half of the children in each of these groups were permitted to play in a room, where they found a human clown standing idly by, as well as a mallet and a toy gun. The remaining youngsters were placed in a comparable situation, except they found a plastic Bobo doll rather than a human. The children were left in the situation for 10 minutes, during which time their aggressive responses toward the clown, plastic, or human were recorded. They weren't told to do anything. They went in a room to play. Not surprisingly, the brief film did increase aggression against the inflated Bobo. Just 2.5 minutes of looking. Watching. However, regardless of whether the children had seen an aggressive film or not, the majority of those who played with the plastic toy exhibited some aggressive action. In contrast to the children who had not observed the movie, none engaged in any sort of aggressive behavior toward the human clown. There are, of course, strong inhibitions against aggressing toward a human being, even one who is attired as a clown, and there was no provocation for doing so. Nonetheless, observation of the aggressive model did lead to imitative physical assaults against the human clown, including at least one swat with a mallet, which was hard enough that the victim showed a red mark on her arm several hours later. The basic finding has been replicated with youngsters from a rural background and with older children. In life situations, the effects of aggressive modeling may occur most often under circumstances where they cannot be observed by parents or other adults. You can always notice these things. They find out that sometimes they don't have the mallet, they don't have the clown, they have other situations, and you don't recognize the parallel. And it's somewhat removed, but it's taken out in some form. And all you know is Johnny and Sammy are constantly fighting, and you can't figure out why. Look at your television scene. You may have the answer right there, because in the family, they're always fighting. Brothers and sisters fight constantly on television. Do they? Don't they? I mean, you most of you watch a lot more television than I have. So you ought to know whether they do or they don't. Those that I have seen, they do. They're fighting all the time. And that means it's conditioned to be normal in the household. So if your children are always fighting, and you say, stop fighting, remember you have just taught them to fight. You have just let them watch an hour teaching them. They have been taught every day to fight, and so in their mind comes, after the week, 5 hours of fighting and 10 minutes of don't fight. So you figure it out. Parental evaluation or instruction regarding the permissibility of aggression seen in the media can be effective in controlling aggression imitation. But this communication may be irrelevant when adults are not later present to monitor the child's behavior. Now, you know, little girls copy, and the boys copy, dad and mom. So they're going to copy on the television, too. Aggressive play. In a relatively early study, nursery school children, aggressive play increased after viewing an aggressive film. Half of the subjects saw one cartoon figure aggress against another by hitting, biting, and so on for virtually the entire duration of the film. Another group of children saw a film of mother bear and three baby bears playing together. Each child was then presented with two toys and his play observed. Pushing a lever with one toy caused one doll to turn and hit the other doll over the head with a stick. Depressing the lever on the other toy caused a wooden ball enclosed in a cage to jump through obstacles. The toys were presented side by side. The child could operate either or both at once if he wished. Children who were exposed to aggressive film used the hitting doll toy more often than those who watched the non-aggressive film. Thus, at least at the level of play, disinhibition occurred. They've done these studies many ways, many different groups, controls, and various things. In view of the fact that most television programs appear to depict aggression as a potent technique for power and achievement, Investigations which have focused upon inhibiting and disinhibiting effects of consequences accrued to the model for aggression of particular importance. In one such study, Bandura Ross and Ross exposed one group of nursery school boys and girls to a television program in which one character, Johnny, refuses another, Rocky, the opportunity to play with some toys. The program goes on to show a series of aggressive responses by Rocky, including hitting Johnny with a rubber ball, shooting darts at Johnny's cars, hitting Johnny with a baton, lassoing him with a hula hoop, and so on. At the end of this sequence, Rocky the aggressor is playing with all of Johnny's toys, treating himself to sweet beverages and cookies, and finally departs with Johnny's hobby horse under his arm and a sack of Johnny's toys over his shoulder. At this point, a commentator announces that Rocky was victorious. In the second group, the program was rearranged so that after Rocky's initial aggression, Johnny retaliated in kind by administering a sound thrashing to the aggressor. Two other groups served as controls. In one, a non-aggressive but highly expressive television program was observed, and the second, no television program was seen. Children's subsequent aggressive responses while playing for 20 minutes in a special test room constituted the primary dependent measure. The results clearly showed that those who observed a rewarded aggressor showed far more aggression themselves than children in the other groups. Moreover, at the conclusion of the experiment, the children were asked to state which of the characters, Rocky or Johnny, they would prefer to emulate. 60% of those who observed Rocky rewarded for his behavior indicated they would select him as a model. Only 20% of those who saw him punished indicated they would choose to emulate him. Additionally, the authors noted a classic example of how socially reprehensible but successful modeled aggressive acts may influence children. One of the girls who had expressed marked disapproval of Rocky's aggressive behavior as it occurred later exhibited many of his aggressive responses. Finally, in an apparent effort to make her emulation of the ruthless but successful Rocky complete, she turned to the experimenter and inquired, "Do you have a sack here?" A number of other studies have also used aggressive play as a measure of aggression. All found that subjects who viewed an aggressive film model engaged in more aggressive play than children who were not so exposed. Increases in aggressive play suggest a general disinhibitory effect, but do not define the social implications of the effect. So, to determine whether viewing aggression will actually make young observers more likely to inflict physical discomfort on others, alternative measures of aggression have also been used. In one study, hospital attendants, high school boys, and young women viewed either the knife fight scene from Rebel Without a Cause or a film of adolescents engaging in constructive activities. Both before and after viewing the film, everyone participated in an experiment which ostensibly required shocking another person for making errors on a learning test. The dependent measure was the difference of the intensity of shocks given during the two sessions. In all three groups, we're talking about adults now in this area, those who saw the aggressive film gave stronger shocks in the second session than did those who saw the constructive film. Although they just say, if he makes an error, you know, give him a shock as a response. But how long you give him the shock depends on whether you saw the more aggressive film or the less one. In the second study, concerning the effects of aggressive and non-aggressive live models, male college students and young male inmates in a maximum security prison for violent criminals participated. Again, in both groups, those exposed to aggressive model administered stronger shocks than those exposed to non-aggressive model. Further, the prisoners were more aggressive than the college students, demonstrating the relationship between laboratory measure and real-life aggression. A similar result has been found in a study of younger children. The participants, 136 boys and girls between the ages of 5 and 9, were taken to a room containing a television monitor and told they could watch television for a few minutes until the experimenter was ready. The sequence they saw came from actual television shows, but it had been videotaped earlier. For all the children, the first 2 minutes of film consists of commercials selected for their humor and attention-getting characteristics. The following 3.5 minutes constituted experimental treatment. Half of the children viewed a sequence from The Untouchables, which contained a chase, two fist-fighting scenes, two shootings, and a knifing. The other children saw an exciting sports sequence. For everyone, the final minute scene was another commercial. Each child was then escorted to another room and seated in front of a large box which had wires leading to the next room. On the box were a green button labeled Help and a red button labeled Hurt. Over the two buttons was a white light. The experimenter explained that the wires were connected to a game that the other child in the adjoining room was going to play. The game involved turning a handle, and each time the child started to turn the handle, the white light would come on. The experimenter explained that by pushing the buttons, the subject could either help the other child by making the handle easier to turn, or hurt the other child by making the handle hot. The longer we pushed the buttons, the more help, more he helped or hurt the other child. He was further told that he had to push one of the buttons every time the light came on. After ensuring that the child understood which button was which, the experimenter left the room and the light came on 20 times. After this, each child was taken to a playroom containing aggressive and non-aggressive toys, and aggressive play was asserted. Assessed. Using total duration of pushing the hurt button in the measure of aggression, the investigators found that children who viewed the aggressive program were significantly more willing to hurt the other child than those who watched the sports sequence. It was possible that the children who viewed the violent television scenes pushed the hurt button longer because they were more excited or aroused. If this line of reasoning is correct, any response of this group would be of higher intensity. Therefore, they also should have pushed the help button longer. They did not. Maybe I'll read one more here. Clearly, there is a great deal of evidence that televised aggression can disinhibit young viewers so they become more likely to act aggressively. But the television programs seen have often been either simulated or taken out of context. If youngsters see entire programs with violence justified according to a regular storyline, will disinhibition still occur? It is known that factors such as provocation and justification in entertainment with aggressive content may alter the effects of the entertainment on adults. In one study, for example, college students were either insulted or not insulted. And then within each group, half of them viewed a film showing justified aggression, while the other half saw a film showing unjustified aggression. Finally, they had opportunity to shock the experimental confederate, the very one who had insulted them. These young men were most likely to give a large number of shocks and shocks of long duration if they had been angered and then seen entertainment in which justified aggression was depicted. Now, for those that may be boring of this, I have a good message from the Word of God coming up in the morning message. But if I don't miss my guess, this might have something to do with your children. It might have something to do with our Sunday school. It might have something to do with our Christian school. It might have something to do with your children's prayer life, spirituality, and future, maybe even heaven or hell. So before anyone gets too fast to accuse, you might realize I may be on something very practical and needful for a Christian assembly. Someone asked me the question, well, since we college kids have grown up with television and have these effects, what do we do about them? Well, analyze and find out what problem areas you've got, and then start working to undo them. For example, if you find yourself lazy and lethargic because of television, commit this area to the Lord and start purposely moving out to look 8 hours a day for a job if you don't have one. Work hard on that job and do it, and do it well. Start doing the opposite. If you find yourself unable to visualize well, and a witness says, you know, I've been watching television so long, he says, I can't visualize very well. You start saying things in a colorful way, and the sun sets, and the mountains, and streams. I can't even hardly visualize all that. I don't see it in front of me. Well, then, start visualizing things. When things are said, concentrate on seeing the brightness of the sun. Concentrate on seeing. Start concentrating on visualizing until you can begin recapture, like the kids used to when we were hearing books. And start reading books and visualizing. Start practicing visualizing. In every way of life, start undoing what you've been doing, is my advice. Else I was going to say, I can't remember what it is right now. Let's see if there's anything else I want to read before I quit here. I got another book I want to look at too. It keeps moving into a little different position as it moves along. I think I'll stop on this right now because maybe we've. Here's another book. This book is The American Opinion. It's It's obviously coming from a right-wing category rather than a left-wing category. I want to say that this deals mainly with news. You see, I just watch television for the news. This deals mainly with the news. Now, whether you agree completely or not with this person's political stand is somewhat immaterial. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican is immaterial or neither. It's possible to be neither. I'm neither. I don't think I may have, if I were to put down which I think maybe is the better party, I have a preference, but, you know, two colors of black are hard to distinguish between sometimes. And I don't think either one of us are going to get us into heaven or produce a millennium. This business about the Democrats are black and the Republicans are white or vice versa is pardon the term, malarkey. They both come from the same camp, as I can see. Although there are heavy responses in some areas than others. But you know, so strong is the brainwash in the mass media today, which is controlled across the whole nation in almost all areas, that there is a very definite feeling against right-wing position. Because it is viewed in light of the liberal position. Right? We have read and seen liberalism to such an degree that anything that seems right of liberal seems to be, say too right? It seems to be extreme. But extreme in relation to what? Extreme in relation to what you've been hearing all your life. It's important to understand that. Now, I get right-wing newspapers, left-wing newspapers, and center-of-the-road newspapers. I consider center-of-the-road newspapers extremely left. So you can see that's where I put left-wing newspapers. I am not saying there have been excesses in the right-wing group, of course. There have been unjustified accusations. There have been lack of scholarship. But over and above that, it seems to me there's been a lot of truth that has not come out in the other magazines. I've been watching this for about 20 years. For example, I can't remember the exact date, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 1960, there was violent persecution by the Roman Catholic Church against evangelical Christians in Colombia, and then spreading to several other South American countries, particularly Colombia. I saw movie films from Pentecostal missionaries. I saw large pictures blown up this big to show to congregations. I heard missionaries tell us what went on, who were in that country, how that the Catholic priests stood up in the town square and firing 30-06 rifles at the Protestants, how that this particular Pentecostal missionaries, the Catholics said, we'll give you Pentecostal devils 24 hours to get out of town. They forced Christians to dig their own graves and bury them. They beat up people for not bowing to statues out in the these statues that they have out in the fields as they pass by. These missionaries were sleeping. When actually fellow pressed the Lord to sleep in the back bed and sleep in the kitchen instead of the back bed instead of the bedroom, which faced the street. They bombed to the window into the bedroom that night, and I saw bullet holes in the street all the way through there that they shot into the walls, and they escaped death by being led of the Spirit to move in the back room. This came out in our Pentecostal evangel. It came out as a protest by the Assemblies of God across the nation, and many of the evangelicals protested to the State Department. Our State Department protested to the Vatican. It came out in no American newspaper that I know of. It was not in the Seattle Times. It was not in the Tacoma News Tribune. It was not in the Seattle PI. It did not occur in the mass media, although it was news, if there ever was news, and occurred for many years. But it appeared in right-wing newspapers. I can tell you a whole lot of things that appeared in... I remember when Castro supposedly took his... the newspaper came out how President Kennedy was such a hero because he made Castro take the missiles out of Cuba. Remember that? But what we saw was a destroyer that photographed missile cases going out of Cuba. There was never any verification that a missile ever left Cuba. Just missile cases. That's all we saw on board. Later, the CIA and the underground in Cuba both said the missiles were still in Cuba. Kennedy was a hero. Khrushchev had been put under. I saw in a right-wing newspaper that Khrushchev won that round, not Kennedy, that we had instead had a reciprocal treatment, and we had, first of all, removed our missiles from Turkey before he would remove missile cases from Cuba. Hailed as a hero. I saw that in right-wing papers. Maybe it was a lie. Maybe it was exaggeration, because you know right-wingers. But it appeared in no other newspaper. 2 years later, I saw in the Seattle PI a little article that if we hadn't been following these things, we'd never have noticed it. But I had been following it, watching all these newses, all these things. And I get loads of things in, and we got about that many notebooks, about that wide now, in our college library filled with various information from various sources like this. I saw an article which said that Turkey is asking the United States government to put atomic landmines on the border between Turkey and Russia to compensate for the missiles we took out in the agreement during the Cuban crisis. That did not come out in any newspaper when it presented President Kennedy as a hero and Americans as coming off good. We really put them in place. But that was never told the American public. This is what I mean by control of the press. And I have watched so many things. I have seen a lot of things in right-wing papers that I doubt are true. A lot of the things that I doubt are true may be true. But on the other hand, I have seen a lot that have proven to be, and I have watched this for many years. So regardless of that, we're still talking about television, and most of the admissions here are from the liberal sources. Now, I'm even a few minutes over, but let me give some of this to you. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll read quite a bit of it. Now, this is written in a lot of color to make it interesting. So, you know, I mean, he's using, you know, figures of speech and so forth. But get the information. If it comes as a great surprise for you to learn that the public airwaves, I'm going to say this article is biased, but I don't think it's prejudiced. That means I don't think it's prejudged. I think it's post-judged. In other words, they have seen what has happened and made judgments. That's not prejudiced. That's not prejudging. It's post-judging. And then they lean heavily on one side, on this side, because they have post-judged. Biasness is not bad. Prejudgment is bad. Prejudice is bad. If you're not biased towards Christianity, there's something wrong with you. But you shouldn't be prejudiced. You shouldn't prejudge. You should post-judge and then be biased. If you post-judge and are not biased in something that's leaning one way and you don't lean with it, there's something wrong with you. So I'm not. So to me, although it is definitely biased, the bias may be completely justified because of the judgment. You understand what I'm saying? If it comes as a great surprise for you to learn that the public airwaves are dominated by the liberals and collectivists, my guess is that you are under 9 years of age, are not smart enough to be reading this magazine, or you have been lost and wandering in the jungles of Amazon for the past 30 years. The impact which television has had in our country over the past 25 years is hard to exaggerate. Those who know better may gnash their teeth a good part of the time, as that's when you're watching television, seeing anything, but many soak up the propaganda like a sponge. Used to drive conservative broadcasters off the air. And I heard this from C.M. Ward, that at the time, up at the college, I heard him say that the NBC has driven off four of the most popular broadcasts of the seven major NBC broadcasts: Fuller's, Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Harvest Time to C.M. Ward. Those four were driven off the 7 largest NBC networks in America. And he told them, we will get the rest of you. We don't want your type on the air. They did find a better station in New York. Some of them still were able to broadcast on substations around, but they were driven off the major stations. The power of television and the other mass media is simply awesome. Consider the Nixon case. While many Americans, both liberal and conservative, rejoiced when Richard Nixon was Watergated, it was certainly nothing to cheer about. A president of the United States was literally hounded from office by a lynch mob and raised by professional polemists. And that was absolutely so. I don't care whether he's guilty or not. Before he was ever pronounced guilty, for 1 year they harassed him horribly, the highest office in the land, instead of waiting until he's guilty, which was absolutely wrong. The Eastern liberal establishment now knows that its mass media can dispatch to political Valhalla, Norwegian heaven, whomever it targets. That should be nothing short of terrifying. Whoever they decide to target, they can work into the ground. That Watergate deal proved that. The key struggle on their frequent occasions, see, the point is, before anybody knew whether he was guilty or not, there was no fact he had not testified. The American public wanted him out and thought he was guilty. They had prejudged him before he was ever brought to court in a democratic society. Like Gamaliel said to the Sanhedrin concerning Jesus Christ, does our law allow us to judge a man before he is tried? This is what the American public does. This is how strong the mass media can be in influencing people to even go against the very democratic standards that they champion themselves in. That's how strong the influence is, America. The key struggle on the frequent occasions when a centrist or conservative occupies the White House will be between the president and the media. And it will be a contest over public opinion. The mass media now have such power, which they're able to apply selectively, that every president since John Kennedy could have been hounded from office or impeached. A spat of books has this year revealed, that JFK had the morals of a sex-starved muskrat. This went unreported in the press at the time, despite the fact that the Washington Press Corps was well aware of it. In fact, so sure was Kennedy that the media would keep his affairs off the late-night news that he made little effort to hide his philandering. The excuse offered is that, unlike Congressman Wayne Hayes, Kennedy had no need to put his paramours on the public payroll, and therefore his private life was none of anybody's beeswax. But John Kennedy did put at least two of his sex partners on the payroll as secretaries, referred to by the Secret Service as Tweedledum and Tweedledee. These women accompanied Kennedy on his trips to satisfy his sexual appetite. How does that differ in the slightest from the transgressions of Wayne Hayes? More important, Kennedy spent so much time juggling his harem that it greatly cut into the performance of his duty as president. Policy decisions were deferred to Dean Rusk, Arthur Schlesinger, and the other new frontiersmen while the president played. Yet Huntley, Brinkley, and Cronkite behaved like the proverbial three monkeys. Compounding the hypocrisy was the fact that the media were meanwhile deliberately creating around the Kennedys a Camelot mythology that might better have been set in the court of Henry VIII. Deriving JFK, and I'm not preaching politics, I'm preaching against television, the power, and showing you what happens and what you're hearing in the news. Deriving JFK from office because of his constant adultery might have been justified, but it would have been like convincing Al Capone on income tax evasion, which was done. They couldn't get him on the real issue. Just as forcing the resignation of Richard Nixon over Watergate was akin to hanging a man for chicken stealing, which was about right. What he did, which was his sin, was not reporting his own people and getting them out of office after he found out they were guilty. And I do not believe that President Johnson or the Democrats would have done any differently if they thought they could keep their best people, you know, who tried to steal somebody else's political secrets. Big deal. Every single one of them had been doing this for ages. That, compared with Richard Nixon's other sins and all the rest of the other sins, was dropped like a drop of water to the ocean. I mean, they were, Richard Nixon and all the rest of them, all full of so much political sins, in my judgment. This Watergate deal that they pumped way big was nothing. Nothing. I can tell you a dozen other things that I was a lot rather impeaching for than that. Our point is that the mass media, particularly the electronic media, have been permitted to become so powerful that they can pick and choose who goes to the gallows and when. Consider, for example, that Nelson Rockefeller was approved as vice president despite revelations during the confirmation hearings that he repeatedly gave large sums of money to public officials in positions to be of use to him. Most particularly, you will recall that when Henry Kissinger was dispatched from Rocky's staff to that of Richard Nixon, he was given a little going-away present of $50,000. Since the Rockefeller family had investments and holdings in 125 separate nations, it is almost impossible for Henry to make a decision involving U.S. foreign policy that is not a potential or actual conflict of interest for those of the Rockefellers. Imagine, here we were in the flood tide of Watergate with everyone in the mass media clucking endlessly about corruption in government. Then in a flood-lit Senate hearing, it is revealed that Rockefeller has given Henry Kissinger a little present of $50,000. Yet the revelation attracts no more attention than an elf sneezing in the midst of the Black Forest. Had the media dragons chosen to breathe fire on the situation, Rockefeller would never have been confirmed as a vice president, and Kissinger would not be Secretary of State. They would both, having caught two of the nation's most important public figures in an out-and-out bribe, however, Walter Cronkite and the others gave Rock and Henry a free pass. Only the cynical will lead to the conclusion that Rockefeller controlled the Chase Manhattan Bank, the largest block of CBS shares, a whopping percent, has anything to do at all to do with it. Columnist Kevin Phillips noted at the time, nor are the other networks removed from the Rockefeller orbit. And he goes on to name all the rest of them that they have controlling shares of. Representative Robert Guillermo, Democrat Republican, commented, I am concerned with the fact that there are 6 or 7 people in New York on all 3 networks who decide exactly what 100 million plus Americans are going to hear about. This bothers me because this is just as much censorship as if it were being done by some government official. Guillermo is right. One of the main features of the news which comes from the network is that it is filtered through and controlled by a small group of carefully selected producers and editors in New York City. The CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite, the NBC Nightly News with John Chancellor, and the ABC Regional Walters Report have a combined audience each night of more than 50 million viewers. The events to be covered, the storyline which will be followed, the correspondent reporting, and the editing of the story are all tightly supervised from New York. And as you know, they are almost always nearly alike as the coverage in Time and Newsweek. Dean Birch's week retort was, that there's one control on that which I think is important. That is, there are 3 of them, and they are highly competitive, which is utterly ludicrous. The competition is between left, lefter, and leftist, on the basis of which personality can attract the largest audience for nearly identical programming. And the top performers admit it. Longtime anchorman Howard K. Smith told TV Guide several years ago that network bias is massive, beginning with the political composition of the news staffs, which are virtually all liberal. By tradition, said Smith, network journalists have a strong leftward bias. Our tradition since FDR, Franklin D. Roosevelt, has been leftward. There's no secret about any of this. Fred Freed of NBC confirmed to TV Guide, this generation of newsmen is a product of the New Deal. Those beliefs of the New Deal are the beliefs that news has grown on. This is true of the networks of Newsweek and the New York Times, of all media. Men of like mind are in the news. It is provincial. The blue and the white collar people who are in revolt now do not have cause for complaint against us. No, in revolt now do have cause for complaint against us. We've ignored their point of view. It's bad. It's bad to pretend that they don't exist. We did this because we tend to be up and middle class liberals. And the little clique of men in New York and Washington who determine what the 74% of the Americans relying on television as the primary source of news are going to see do not even pretend to be objective. David Brinkley has said quite openly, if I were objective, or if you were objective, or if anyone was, we would have to be put away somewhere in an institution because we'd be some sort of a vegetable. Objectivity is impossible to a human being. A little bit more before I close the session here. Later he declared, news is what I say it is. It's something worth knowing by my standards. Now, pay attention to this, because if you're watching news and you read about it in the papers, you tend to believe it as it's given, right? And then you form an opinion. Frank Reynolds of ABC put it this way. I think your program has to reflect what your basic feelings are. I'll plead guilty to that, Bill Moyers intones. Of all the myths of journalism, objectivity is the greatest. John Secondaria, however you pronounce it, of ABC comments, it's absolutely impossible to write a broadcast to put together pictures without having a point of view. And Quincy Howell, a former president of the Association of Radio TV News Analysts, declares, all news presented on radio and television editorializes. The newscaster editorializes in what he emphasizes and what he plays down and what he omits and what he includes. This bias creates enormous distortion, and that too is admitted. And producer Bob Rogers of NBC said, the responsible man, the productive man, the man without a chip on his shoulder, is the forgotten man. You hardly ever see him on television. The imbalance in coverage is causing Americans to mistrust each other. And out of ABC, these words from Howard K. Smith, TV news isn't telling people the way life is. We are giving the public a wholly negative picture on a medium so vivid that it damages morale with the bombardment of despair. This is what bothers me, is that always you hear the minorities, always the leftist view. You never hear the right. I see things and I say, well, I know the argument, but I never read once the argument against it, but I read dozens of arguments for it. Occasionally you have a for and against, and it's the left of the leftist in most cases. So you see, they know what they are doing, and yet they do it anyway. In the words of Leopold Tiomand, formerly at Columbia University and now a journalist, it is the smell of despotism that is emanating from the media. They have adopted the totalitarian strategy by which lies and half-truths, repeated often enough, become accepted as true. Cataloging the list of network sins runs the gamut of public concerns, foreign and domestic. Just tiptoeing through the domestic tulip, the coverage given by the television news departments to such national issues as the right to keep and bear arms, forcing busing, inflation, crime, union power, welfare, and private enterprise is appalling. Republican scandals are magnified out of all proportion, while Democratic atrocities are observed through the wrong end of the telescope. On the twin issues of energy and ecology, the television newsboys in the luxurious penthouses in Manhattan and Washington would have the rest of us see by lighting just one little candle rather than clear the artificially created darkness. Treatment of national defense and foreign policy is equally infuriating and probably more dangerous. The Institute for American Strategy, greatly concerned, has financed a comprehensive study by a scholar from the Brookings Institute to look into CBS coverage of national defense. That network was selected for the study because it has the largest audience. The result makes the boys from Taliville look like volunteer Soviet agents. he goes on to show you what the report is about. CBS National Security News was so spotty and lopsided that it failed to provide the essential facts for understanding U.S. defense and military issues, the Soviet definition of detente, or the forward surge in Soviet military might. Two, CBS News was an active advocate of a position that implied or called for lesser commitment to American allies and lower defense expenditures. Three, this came out of the study now of all news coverages of CBS News failed to seek out actively all opposing views on defense issues, particularly those calling for stronger policy. Four, it almost totally neglected the view of millions calling for stronger defense and failed to provide a reasonable opportunity for the presentation and discussion of related national security views. Five, CBS coverage of the Vietnam War was found in the study to be strongly and persistently critical of U.S. policy and of the South Vietnam allies and was mildly favorable to North Vietnam. The study claimed, in fact, that 83.33% of the themes and stories about South Vietnam were critical of that U.S. ally. And it revealed that 57.32% of the themes and stories about North Vietnam were favorable to the communist enemy. Nearly two-thirds of CBS news stories in U.S. military affairs were unfavorable to the military, and only 13% were favorable. Using the study figures, the Institute for American Strategy contends that in 1972, CBS News gave reasonably coverage 34.63% to administration viewpoints, but much greater coverage, 61.83%, to critics who advocated a reduction in defense and foreign policy commitments, and almost no coverage, 3.54%, to those who supported a stronger U.S. defense and foreign policy. There are always groups in Washington expressing views of alarm over the state of our defenses. We don't carry those stories, Cronkite said. The story is that there are those who want to cut defense spending. You get it? The list of our outrages go on and on. Kissinger's ionized and detente enshrined. The hell of Red China is portrayed as a successful experiment in social engineering. And on, He goes down about, he said, the latest international issue being given the Madison Avenue treatment by the boys with the gray flannel mouths of the Panama Canal. Now the election is over. Unless Congress is willing to fight, you can prepare to kiss that Pacific waterway of fond adieu. And he goes right on down one line after another. So what I'm saying is, you say, well, I only watch television, watch the news. But we're not getting the news unslanted, boxed in, trimmed, operated on, you know, and slanted. In the newspapers, all on the television. And the right-wing newspapers I get read completely different than the liberal press that I get. Completely different. It becomes questionable whether even for the reasons that adult watches television, that you got anything left with the media. We do need to be aware of these things, at least. You need to watch the effects of your family. You need to stop and think, what kind of magazines am I buying? Am I buying the right ones? Am I buying the right news? Am I listening to the right news? Am I watching with a certain critical acumen? And that's pretty hard to judge, isn't it? How do you judge when you constantly get fed all the time? All you know is what you're told. We just need to realize that there are forces at work, stems from Satan, not the Democrats, not even the communists, they're a tool of Satan, not the liberals even, it's the Satan who is behind everything to twist, every single thing that there is. Every single thing, political, entertainment, music, you name it, he's there to influence it one way or another and cause problems in the home. This week I'm going to bring you, won't take very long, about 5 minutes, the physiological effects and some of the other effects too of rock music according to a study, and some more information concerning raising of children by some questions passed in, and we'll shortly be into another subject in the Sunday School Hour. But I feel like that we need to take some of these practical areas and do need to spend some time on them. They're worthy of some of our time. They're worthy of our knowledge, because it affects our Sunday school, our lives, our children, our church, our Christian school, your home life, the future life, the ministry, the prayer life. Let's don't just decide that these things don't affect it. It's just Bible reading and prayer. Everything they do and see. If you don't want those kind of people in your home, don't allow you in your home. Watch out and see whether you would let your children play with those people that they're watching on television before you let them watch them on television. Make sure you would associate with them before you do. Don't just assume that only kids are affected by television. Adults are affected by television. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any advertisements given on television. Now, one more thing I want to say. It is obvious from the study that 100 out of 100 children don't break the Bobo doll, which shows us that some children who are more well-adjusted after watching that don't indicate and show the same behavior characteristics, that through the learning and training and other things, they don't just fall immediately. That shows us that there's a difference in children, both in behavior character and in training. This shows us, one, that we should be strong in our Christian training, so what they do see in television, at grandma's, at the neighbor's, what they see in real life, doesn't upset their apple cart. It depends on the home they come from. Further, the studies do not indicate what happens after 25 hours of television a week for 5 years. They just watched a half-hour program or a 10-minute program or a 2.5-minute program, and then they observed immediate results. It doesn't give you the indication. So even children that are not prone that way may have some influence. But it also showed, for example, in violent filming, the girls didn't behave like the boys. The boys tend to be much more aggressive and following than the girls, because the girls were more passive in nature. But that doesn't mean that the girls are ineffective, because they take out the aggression in other areas. They may take out the aggression in giving themselves sexually. They may take out the aggression in verbally. They may take out in ways that you can't relate, because they're not beating a Bobo doll up. And so there are differences, and you can't always see the effects. I'm just saying we need to be really careful, to be strong in the Word, and to watch that because Jesus has told us, God has told us, the Word has told us, come out from the world and be separate, saith the Lord. I think we should be careful what we hear, what we see, what we taste, don't you? And what we do. I think we need to be careful in this world if we're going to make it through trials, avoid the temptations of the devil, not get hooked or snared. This world is getting more and more sinful. We can't just shut our eyes and run halfway in the world through this thing and expect to get up as a perfect bride of Christ. If you want to be a bride without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, don't iron wrinkles into your garment. Be careful of, if you want to go to a wedding and have a beautiful white dress, don't walk all down through Skid Row for a little tour before your wedding with your dress on. You know what I'm saying? We need to be careful, don't we? God bless you.